Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the number one source for horror t-shirts with especially curated collections created by renowned horror artists. They offer the best art and the best quality anywhere. New this week at Fright Rags, they have brand new Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 tees and apparel and pins, and I think I saw socks in there. Fresh from Midsummer Scream, we have the new Slashback Video VHS tribute shirts. Yes, that's a shameless plug. The awesome new Warriors line is now available. There's also a They Live line with multiple t-shirts and enamel pins. And also, and this got me excited, a House and House 2 t-shirts. I'm going to be wearing that House Madness. 2 t-shirt.
House 2 t-shirt.
Proudly.
Wow.
Head to FrightRags.com now. That's Fright-Rags.com. You can enter the code SUMMERSHOCK10. Again, that's SUMMERSHOCK10 at checkout to get 10% off your entire order. And it better be all House 2 related. Again, that's SUMMERSHOCK10. Head to Fright-Rags.com now.
Blumhouse is proud to present our newest podcast, Fear Initiative, a weekly horror role-playing game podcast. Join Game Master David Ian McKendry as he takes players Morgan Peter Brown, Kara Mandel, Jeff Seidman, Megan Duffy, Rob Schraub, Josh Forbes, and Clark Wolf through a weekly journey of horror-inspired role-playing adventures. Creepy dolls, soulless killers, and bloodthirsty beasts. This role-playing game is scary as shit, with occasional music numbers. Tune in every week to hear what horrific quest awaits. Blumhouse's Fear Initiative just launched this week on the Blumhouse Podcast Network and is now available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and more. Please find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram under Fear Initiative.
Welcome to episode 110 of Shockwaves. I'm your host, Rob Galuzzo. I'm sitting
here with Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Wow, that died fast. Wow, thanks for that enthusiasm, Elric.
Hey, you gave me some whiskey.
That's true. We're already on the Bogart Whiskered. Anyway,
I brought pie.
Becca brought pie. I'm saving the pie for in between our guest and the opening because, as Elric said on the way here, we can't Udo on an empty stomach.
Oh my God.
And I agree with that. That's my favorite.
I still don't believe it will happen. I believe.
I don't either.
The idea of us being in a room alone with Udo just sounds too marvelous to be.
What's Ryan playing?
He's playing Shorty. It's your birthday.
There you go. Ryan.
Now we theme just song of Happy Death Day.
Oh, man. Well, thank you. My hosts, Elric Kane, Ryan Tarek, and Rebecca McKendry. We're all here.
We're a little spry today.
We are.
Feeling frisky.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's gonna get
got a frisky guest.
It's gonna get weird. I hope.
I want weird.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's Udo, so it's gonna get weird.
Elric, you're gonna have to
get another
lead.
Gear.
You've already handled him on stage for Suspiria,
that's right,
so you've got experience.
And Becca got handled by him. Yes,
I did.
Stage.
I had him during the Puppet Master panel at Texas Frightmare, and he literally, in the middle of the panel, got up out of his seat, walked over to me, and started giving me a back rub.
I'll take the back rub tonight. I don't care. It's Udo.
This was on stage in the middle of the panel, and right. I'm like, do I continue? Do I say? And so I was doing this very courteous. Oh, thank you, Udo. Trying to hint that it was, and he just kept going. Like 10 minutes later, I was just like, okay, Udo, we're doing this. So well, here we are.
What I love about Udo is that in the movie Suspiria,
yes,
he has approximately a line and a half. He spoke more than anyone on the panel.
On the panel, yeah.
Including Dario Argento, yeah. Claudia Simonetti, multiple other people involved in the movie. It was just suddenly Udo's stories. I was like, wow, that's you got a lot to say for your one-line set.
Well, you can ask him that again.
I am
going to ask
him. Luckily, it's a good
story.
Line. It is dubbed, unfortunately, but that's okay. He looks beautiful back then. He was he's a very handsome guy.
No, I rewatched part of Blood of Frankenstein this morning in prep for the show.
Just to watch those organs. He loved those slimy organs.
The gallbladder. You have to
so gross,
fuck life in the gallbladder. But yeah, he's just beautiful in
he
that. Just
eyes,
very poetic. Very and yeah, it's very chiseled.
We also have an audience. There's friends in the room.
Hi, friends.
They came all the way from Arizona since I'm the only one that showed up to Mad Monster Party, right? Is that why you came?
I had
No. Yeah, they had to. They had to get the rest. Well, the full
blame me. It's my fault. Sorry.
Well, Paula Haefeli is with us again. She came back.
Hi, Paula.
So, hello, Paula.
And Johnny got me a gift, which I'm going to open right now on air.
Oh.
So let's describe this unboxing. So the
do you
want to
bet if I have it or not?
All right. Yes.
But I'm
the wrapping
guess.
Is
but
Christmas.
No.
Ryan, whisper it because people like that on the internet.
Okay. So the wrapping is Christmas themed. There's little dogs wearing sweaters.
Yep. It's very shiny.
It's very shiny. I'm very captivated by this.
It's not very hard.
But Rob is looking at it with awe. He's about to open it.
He's
tearing along the seam.
He's opening it.
And
it's a Blu-ray. What is this a Blu-ray for?
It is the epic Never Too Young to Die, starring John Stamos and Vanity and Gene Simmons.
Which has been discussed on Shockwaves.
And young Robert Englund as well. And yes, of course I own this movie.
Don't feel too bad, guys, because I gave Rob a record, and he said...
And I already own it, too.
This is why I bought a pizza.
I'm really hard
you can't
to...
fail with
I apologize. It's just
this
I have
why
no,
I made a pie.
I have no self-control when I see that there's a Student Bodies record or Never Too Young to Die on Blu-ray.
Wait, you gave him the Student Bodies record?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over me?
Well,
oh my gosh.
I'm never re-gifted.
Well, it's also not your birthday, Becca.
Yes.
You're like that kid at the birthday party trying to steal the other people's presents.
No horse head bookends for you.
Thank you regardless. It's the thought that counts. There's a special kind of person that gets you the one and only John Stamos feature movie.
It's true. Yeah. That is a fine movie.
Yes, 100%. So let's see what else is going on. So I just wanted to read this tweet from today because I thought it was hilarious. Last week was our metal episode with Brandon Small, which was great. I'm wearing a Metallica t-shirt and I went to go have lunch today. And immediately after somebody, this is Regis Duffy, DJ Crypt Kicker, tweeted, in a coffee shop in Las Vegas listening to Shockwaves talk metal bands with Brandon Small when Icon's Rob G walks by outside the window wearing a Metallica shirt. First time the podcast went 3D for me.
We got to get him on the show.
So, yeah,
I've hung out with him a few times.
Cool.
He's a listener. He's a great guy. He's also a great Halloween mixer. Every year I get a Halloween mix from DJ Crypt Keeper.
I would love one.
It's pretty spectacular. Yeah.
Wow.
I have a similar story. I was on the Universal lot today, and I was in the Coffee Bean, and I got a very enthusiastic shout from across the Coffee Bean. I said, holy cow, great to finally meet you, Mr. John Estrada. From Universal.
He's
a big fan of ours. Mm-hmm. He was super stoked. So, John, this is a shout out to you. One day I will do the Ghost of Mars voice for you in the flesh, but the Coffee Bean wasn't the right place to do it.
I was at Universal every day this summer for when I was teaching there, and he would always like message me and be like, where are you? And I never got to meet him, so I'm glad you finally did.
Yeah.
I hope to meet you someday, John.
Somebody had to.
Eric Estrada is also a big listener of the show.
Yes, Eric Estrada. huge Chips fans.
New Year's Evil.
Yeah, New Year's Evil, yeah.
Going to his
party. Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, I guess we have a lot of things to talk about, but I want to jump in with the movie that Ryan and I saw last night. Again, we both saw it once, and last night was the new Puppet Master movie here at the Egyptian Theater in California. And the reason I wanted to start with that is because I sat down, and the gal sitting next to me, her name was Kelsey, recognized my laugh from this show and said, are you from Shockwaves? And it's like, oh, cool. We get to watch Puppet Master together. I was like, oh, it's so offensive. Just wait.
I also watched Puppet Master.
Oh, were you there last night?
No, I watched. I had a screener link, which I also sent to
Elric. I was at home watching it on the screener link.
So, yeah. So we were all watching it simultaneously.
We were all on.
We've all seen it. Wow. Okay.
This is my second time.
This is my second time as well.
It was my first time.
It is... It is a Puppet Master movie, all right. Highly offensive, non-PC. Kind of fun, though.
Mm-hmm. My favorite line of the entire year is in the movie, which is just, bitch-ass puppet.
Yeah.
It comes from the very end of the movie, but I just thought it was a great line.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm not really that familiar with Puppet Masters besides like the first couple probably from like 20 years ago. I think the writing's really fun in terms of the dialogue. You can tell it's S. Craig Zahler's voice.
Yeah.
I think the dialogue's good. I thought the kills were awesome, really fun.
Kills were
all the puppet
amazing.
Stuff's good. The only thing lacking is there's actually not a story at all. No story because there's actually, I don't know what they're trying to do. Like, there's no plot. Like, what are they trying to achieve?
Oh, the puppets?
Yeah, besides just... because
it's hate crimes, Elric.
Yeah.
They're Nazis.
Yeah. Like, where's the big hate crime? Where's the big plan, guys? I need a bigger plan behind it. But funnily enough, not just because he's on the show, I thought Udo was really good in it, and I wanted that to be in it even more.
More, yeah.
Because
he's only in it for 3 minutes.
Yeah. I was sad if Udo didn't come back. Yeah, he really good makeup. I wish that they'd kept him around for longer. I did enjoy how meta it was, because I think that if you're going to do anything with Puppet Master at this point, that's a smart way to go. How it did acknowledge Puppet Master and fandom
and the toys
and the collectability and things like that.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, what are they on? Puppet Master 12? Like 25? 13th,
they're probably 14th one at this point.
Charlie may be shooting one in the parking lot right now. We can't guarantee.
There's another one in production.
So, but I think that if you're going to try to, you know, reboot it, that's kind of the way to go, where you have to kind of do allegiance to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably the most fun Puppet Master of the bunch. I mean, I'm not a diehard fan of them. I think the last one I saw was the one with Six Shooter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Which is the third one.
Which I saw in, like,
with Leech High Woman,
school?
Was she?
Yeah, she's in all
she's
of them.
She's in all
okay.
of them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what's missing. I want to see Leech. I want a rebooted Leech Woman. That's
There was... I liked the movie. I had a lot of fun with it. But at the same time, don't take this as, hey, this is like the next great horror movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not. It's kind of what it does is it harkens back to, in my opinion... More than Full Moon, it really captures more of the early spirit of Trauma.
Yep.
Which is kind of being non PC, over
the top. We don't care
gore,
who we're going to piss off.
And, you know, has that kind of independent, low budget feel to it. But, you know, in some cool, recognizable, you'd know a lot of the comedians in the movie.
Like Thomas Lennon's the lead. Yeah. And he was, I liked him in it. I thought he was great.
He's got great delivery.
Also, it annoyed me when Craig Zeller's Roland Cellblock came out and certain people would be like, oh, he's probably clearly a conservative, something, his voice. And it's like, no, watch this movie. He's trying to offend everyone. There's no one safe from this. Yeah. And I think that's really clear in his writing. And it just kind of bothers me when people want to read into somebody's politics based on just the movie and the voices of the characters they read. But, you know, we can ask Udo about that because he is in that too.
That's true.
Actually, a really good role in Brawl.
Yeah. But I miss the classic puppets. Like, they gave them all new looks and stuff. Like, that was what I got on the second
one.
Who's
the one with the, is it Fisto? I don't know his name. The one with the big fist.
Pinhead.
His name is actually
Who's the frog?
Pinhead.
I like the frog.
The frog was brand new. Brand new puppet.
Frog's new. Okay.
Felt
there's an alien, like a grasshopper alien thing.
The helicopter dude's kind of cool.
So the question is,
but they kept, like, Tunneler was in there, right?
Tunneler was there.
But did he tunnel anybody? Because he kept tunneling the ceilings, but then Blade would come out.
Yeah, Blade.
Wait, the key death. Okay, because I was about to ask you guys, was anything too much for you? Because I have one friend on the way here. Yeah, probably the same thing, who said, I'm really into, I like the movie, but this one thing is just, you know.
It was too much.
They went there. Because it's done deadpan.
I know.
It's just, it's fine. It doesn't offend me.
Is it in the
I can't be offended.
Yeah.
But it felt like it just kind of went flat.
Yeah, everyone laughed.
There's one.
Okay. Yeah, in a theater, you're going to. Yeah,
there's one by. There's one by, and I'll try to be as vague as possible. There's one by the toilet. That gets a big applause.
Yeah, that one's great.
There's one by the bed that I'm just kind of like.
Arm gag? I thought the arm gag was amazing.
Arm gag was good, but there's one involving a window that I thought was phenomenal as possibly the best kill of this year. Because it was just so unexpected, and it's timed so perfectly.
Yeah.
It's actually the best timed piece of the whole movie, because there's some really random editing in it, too. There's like a sex scene between Thomas Lennon and his girlfriend. No music, just played out in real time, and then they mumble a few things that I didn't understand, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's it.
Yeah, I think the whole audience is like, that might have been a little too long. I like that normally, but that was a little too long to watch.
It was a little long. But it was still, I mean, like, I still had a thrill watching it. I mean, like, the thing is, I heard a lot of people going, oh, this is problematic. Yes, it is problematic, and tying into what you said, Elric.
Kind of, yeah.
But the thing is as long as it's responsible to bring it back around to... Nazis suck.
Yeah,
and they get their comeuppance.
And the Jews were awesome. The Jewish character kicks them. It's fun. That's all you need to do.
He's the best character. Yeah,
he's fun.
And I do like that. There's like a little history lesson.
Yeah,
the guy's like, the Jewish guy was like, well. You know, sometimes they collect Nazi paraphernalia, and it's like taking the power back. And I'm like, yeah, man,
that was actually a good
absolutely.
Little scene. Yeah.
So that's Puppet Master, the Littlest Reich. But I went back home last night and went back to the first one because I have, like, no memory of it. I forgot that Barbara Crampton is in the first one as well.
Oh, wow. I don't remember that at all.
She's got a bit part at the very beginning. She's girl at Gypsies or whatever. And I was like, oh, Barbara. Oh, that's kind of a new – because she's obviously in the new one.
She's the cop,
But the original Puppet Master is also – is not good. My memory, I was like, what are they doing? The opening scene's great, about too long. And then it's like a bunch of random people in a house for like a one's a psychic. It's like, wait a minute.
There's a psychic, and then there's like a sex addict, if I remember.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, that is so
That's true.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's kind of like
What's
first
the one you like, though? The three?
Three is by far the best one.
That's the one you always
The one with Six Shooter?
Six Shooter, Toulon's Revenge, goes back to World War II.
Oh, there we go.
Oh,
it's got
that's
the all-star
the
cast. Guy Rolfe is Toulon, which is great. Sarah Douglas from Superman 2 is Toulon's wife. She becomes Leech Woman. It's just the one that, like, actually tries really hard to be a studio movie. And it's actually pretty cool. So that's my favorite one.
The funny thing is just seeing Lorenzo Di Bonaventura's name at the very beginning. I mean, Lorenzo, I mean, he produces giant movies for Paramount. It's just very weird to see him. But we also should mention, I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but Fabio Frizzi did all the
score.
All the music. At the very beginning, there was a credit that says, Puppet, March of the Puppet theme or whatever it's called by Fabio Frizzi. And you're like, cool, but he did the whole mute. Like, he did the whole score.
Cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, that's
except
really
for the sex scene. Fabio was
he did more, but it's not, you'll see it all credited there. It's just Fabio.
I did like the angle of having comedians in the role and making it funny. I thought that was good. It worked on that level.
I mean, it's little dolls. You can't really take it out of that. I mean, although, like, there was a great joke about where they kept calling them dolls, and, and he's just like, they're puppets.
In that, I guess we should talk about something that's kind of similarly themed in the sense that it's kind of comedy and horror. Meg. The Meg.
Oh, boy.
So, did you see it?
I have not
seen it. You haven't seen it? You haven't
seen
it?
The only reason I didn't is because the negative stuff started coming out. I was like,
Don't listen to
that. I don't listen.
I need to go opening night.
I
need to get out early.
The Meg I saw opening night at the Dome. And it was fantastic because a good contingent of horror folk came out and a bunch of directors I saw in the audience. Like, I saw the Spearing Brothers hanging out. I saw Chris Landon out there. And I was like, this is fantastic. And the crowd was perfect because it's a film you can't take seriously whatsoever, in spite of them trying to layer in some, like, you know, dramatic flourishes. But I had a blast with it.
I saw it by myself this morning at 10:30 a.m.
That's so sad.
And I saw 3D with
nice.
What do you call it? Shit.
4D?
4D.
Sense around?
No,
Touch-a-vision?
I saw 3D with the giant screen. Why can't I fucking remember the name now? The giant screen, like Florida
Cinerama.
IMAX. Thank you.
There we go. Wow.
We got there.
My brain is stroking out.
Sounds like.
So, yeah.
I'm glad we have witnesses in the audience just to see how this really goes.
Oh, my God. No,
and Eric
I saw,
and I are the ones drinking whiskey.
Yeah.
So I saw it this morning, super early, 3D IMAX, and which was great. Mm. I had the blast with it. And it was maybe me and three other people in the theater. Yeah. And it was still just an absolute blast. And I would have loved to see it with people, like, cheering and things like that, because I'm sure that it would have been huge.
Could you tell where it was toned down? Because I guess that's what all the controversy
is. Yes, you can see where it's toned down. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, my biggest gripe against it is it should have been over the top.
Much gorier.
And fun. And, you know.
And you can see where, like, you know, these kills happen, that it kind of gets really sanitized.
So they shot that. So there could be a version. No, they didn't shoot.
I think they did. I would assume not. Like, it was intended 3D, PG-13 from the get-go. Yeah.
After Eli Roth left, probably.
Yeah.
He would have gone.
It was weird. It was and it's a strangely structured movie because the first chunk is them exploring the trench where the Meg comes out of. And it's a rescue mission. It's a rescue movie for the first, like, 30 minutes, 45 minutes?
There's a couple of different rescues.
Well, like, there's one giant rescue. And then you get the Meg's release, and then it's a big chase movie.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get to the chase, it's a chase movie up until Meg reaches shore, which you see in the trailers, and it delivers on one thing, and I don't want to say it, but beforehand, somebody was like, what are you excited about? And I'm like, if Jason Statham does this one thing with a knife, I am all in.
He totally does it.
It literally happens. And I was like, there he is. Yeah. I'm sold. I'm
no,
good. I'm good.
This, it's not the book. I will say that.
No.
Like, the book is much more kind of science-y based, much more about, like, you know, the Meg's nature and tracking where it could be based on seal movements and things like that. And the book also spans out over multiple different characters. It feels more kind of ensemble. And this one is just like, how many cool badass things can we give Statham? And there's not very much science or logic behind it. Like, in the book, the Meg's glow. Because they're from the deep sea.
That's
and
ridiculous.
It's
there
wonderful.
Multiple Megs or just one
there's multiple in the book. I won't reveal what happens in the movie, but there's multiple in the book.
Yeah.
It was still fun. And I mean, the plot was meh. It's literally, if somebody came up and said, okay, I need a Megalodon movie, go. I feel like half of America would have pitched this exact same concept.
The one, I was going to say, there's one moment in the film where someone encounters the Meg, is trapped at the bottom of the ocean, and they've got to enlist Statham, who's retired from his job. And so they reach him, and you're like,
you're wondering why they're going after him specifically, and it's probably just because of his set of skills. And then it's revealed that the woman who's trapped at the bottom of the ocean and stuff is his ex-wife.
And that Statham has already seen a Meg. Yeah. And everybody said he was crazy for it, and that's why he was like disregarded.
But at that point, because we've been going with this for 20 minutes, you know, and when it's revealed it's his ex-wife, the audience just lost their shit.
Oh,
they're
God,
like,
yeah.
Of course it is! It's that kind of film. Just kick back, relax, have fun. And Becca is John Turteltaub, so of course you like it because you love all the national treasure.
It is. And it feels, it's the same, just giant scope where if you just want a giant fucking shark movie where somebody just literally puked money at the screen and you just want to eat popcorn and watch it, that is what this movie is.
Well, and
it's
made
fun.
A lot of money, so it's going to have sequels. Well. Okay.
And I know people were just immediately disregarding it and being like, oh, well, you know, it's not brilliant. It's not Citizen Kane. And yeah, it's a giant shark movie. Go it's clap your hands, Kane. Giggle, and eat popcorn.
I was expecting Citizen Kane, Rob. I really thought I was going to go see Meg and get Citizen Kane.
Man.
Classical. Okay.
Birthday boy, what do you got?
Oh, well, I've got two that are tied in together, which are, let me bring up my Letterboxd, because when we're on our phones and laptops, as you saw in the video, it's because we're looking these things up, not because we're not paying attention.
I'm being great. Yeah, I had to come
I'm
to defense
the guy on Twitter.
I hide my phone. Elric, he writes down like four things.
I'm chill, man.
So I did a kind of an unintentional double bill of rat-themed horror.
Oh.
and by that I mean I had the Blu-ray from Scream Factory of Unknown Origin.
Yes.
With Peter Weller, directed by, and I had never seen this movie.
Oh.
This movie's amazing.
Yeah, Weller's awesome in it. I love that film.
Weller's amazing.
It's really good.
Basically, there's not much more to it than Weller has got.
It's Moby Dick.
A giant
it's just Moby Dick.
Freaking rat in his house. His wife and kid are away. It's just him, giant rat. This is the smartest damn rat on the face of the planet. And the way that it's shot and orchestrated just feels like freaking Jaws. Like he's going through like the tunnels around. And there's just a lot of fun stuff to it. But it's, I guess it's serious, but it's just darkly hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I found it terrifying because I had a short-lived rat problem at the beginning of this year, and I can tell you it is not fun at all.
Home invasions and rats are what get under your skin.
They're pretty terrible, especially when it's
thing,
both.
Really.
Yes. Yeah. So I felt for Peter Weller because it was rough, and at one point there's a cat that gets introduced, and even the cat can't stand up to this thing.
Do they ever explain why he's so obsessed with it? I recall it becoming an Ahab.
I just think that's it. Yeah, it just happens.
It's that kind of story.
And that's the thing. It's like, what a weird, oddball movie.
Yeah.
That, like, who is this for? Like, where was the pitch that said, you know what?
Nature run amok.
We want a giant rat to just terrorize for an entire movie Peter Weller.
Is this 70s? I feel like
early 80s.
Early 80s.
Right?
Wow.
I mean, New York was probably having terrible rat problems. It could have been getting in on that fear.
Yeah. But he did. I mean, you know, he directed the hell out of it.
Yeah, he's a really good action director.
Wow.
He's great.
Yeah, so that's on Blu-ray. And then I don't know why, but they came out with this. I know why. I was following up the theme. But they came out with this Stephen King collection on DVD that's like, it's only like $20 and it has like six King's movies. And the reason I got it was for The Stand. McGarris is The Stand because that's out of print.
Right.
But it's got The Stand. I think it's got The Langoliers. It's got a ton of movies in it, including one I'd never seen, which is Graveyard Shift.
Oh, yeah.
And so as soon as I finished Of Unknown Origin, I was like, well, I think I have to go right to Graveyard Shift.
I kind of like Graveyard Shift.
I kind of do, too.
Yeah.
It's just a really bizarre, weirdo movie where basically there is a giant, like, in this case, it is a monster-sized giant rat.
Yeah.
That, I guess it's like a cotton
factory. It's like a bat rat. Yeah.
It's a bat rat, whatever the hell it is. But basically, it's a factory where they're pulling cotton for coats and stuff like that, and they have a tremendous rat problem, and it's run by the guy that played the dad in Monster Squad, and he's kind of a scumbag, and it's like this new dude. But what really struck me is Brad Dourif is amazing because he's the exterminator.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you want to see Brad Dourif at 11 in every single scene about how he talks about rats,
watch him in a movie, any movie.
He is.
That's his level.
He is the most intense rat exterminator I've ever seen in a movie ever. And you know Dourif, he brings it all. He's always got that one eye that's tearing.
Yeah.
And so like that's how intense he is in this movie. But I kind of had fun with it, if anything, because it's a creature feature.
Yeah.
And here's the big difference between movies of then and now, where now they rely so heavily on CG for everything. I love that as weird looking as it was, it's a giant practical creature with bat wings and all sorts of stuff. There's almost like there's one sequence where it grabs a person with its wing, and like you could see the face up against like the wing. It kind of reminded me of the Blob,
yeah.
where it's like, you know, kind of like trying to stretch out, and it's yeah. getting like whatever consumed underneath there.
There's some good creature effects and good gore gags and stuff in that. I remember that was like one of the first. R-rated? It's
yeah.
R-rated.
Yeah.
It was one of the first R-rated movies that I got to go see, venture out of the house and go see on my own. And I remember I saw that as a double feature with People Under the Stairs.
Oh,
I think.
Wow. That's probably about, yeah, that's around,
around
the same time.
But
yeah.
I remember enjoying it. I wanted to go back and read the short story that it's based on.
The short story is a little bit more terrifying, I thought. Like, the short story has a little bit more ambience than the movie did. But I still enjoyed the movie. Like, the short story gets into a lot of, like, the architecture of the building. Like, it talks about the sub-basements and how they'd get down into the basement and then find the other basement below that and all of the different doors. So it builds a lot more tension than just, hey, we have a rat problem. We should go into the basement and check. Giant bat rat!
Yeah.
Once you see rats, they're not scary. The idea of rats that is scary, I guess, is that it's vermin and that it's dirty. I think it's the idea that dirt... Same with flies. I find flies really disgusting because they imply that I'm doing something wrong. Like, that there's something gross happening if there it's in your house. So I think I don't know for me.
You've never lived in New York.
Huh?
Yeah,
I have. I was born there.
He was
born there. It's just like they just exist. Yeah. It doesn't matter what you do. Yeah.
Ryan doesn't accept that I'm a New Yorker every time it comes up. No. He just frowns and looks sad about
what, that accent. No.
Of course, he's from Connecticut. So,
I lived in New York for 6 years.
Yeah, I was there for like eight.
So, Graveyard Shift. And again, I think it's still probably $20, but just look up Stephen King. I think it's called the Stephen King TV and Movie Collection. And it's got a ton of great. It's Golden Years is in there. Mm. It's like a ton of his stuff for $20. Not the Mangler.
Don't buy it.
No, it's not TV. No. Elric and Ellison.
TV. Oh, The Dead Zone, Pet Cemetery, Langoliers. Yeah, a ton of stuff.
I need to rewatch
The Langoliers. Was for TV?
Me too.
No, The Langoliers was not for TV.
I did not enjoy The Langoliers, but I'm intrigued to see it again. I remember thinking that the giant time-eating things look like Pac-Man.
It was my memory, because I love the story, I remember buying Four Past Midnight when it came out and reading that and being enthralled by it. I remember the first half of the movie is really good. It's that ending that's really disappointing because it's incomplete CGI effects.
Yep. When they're trying to figure out what's going on, it was amazing, intense. And as soon as they, if you remember that old show, The Max, that used to be on MTV, they look like the Izzes from The Max, kind of melded with Pac-Man. And then they literally just eat the screen. And you're like, I don't know what's happening. But then Tommyknockers was near that time as well.
Yeah.
And I remember liking parts of Tommyknockers, finding parts of it terrifying. And other parts, like, I don't even know what the fuck is going on anymore. He's powering a spaceship with his mind.
I think Tommyknockers is the book that King said he doesn't remember at all.
Right? Yeah, I thought that was Dreamcatcher.
Maybe that too. There's a couple of King books that
Mike Flanagan hasn't forgotten.
Yeah.
There's
every year.
Some like
Dreamcatcher Day.
There's probably some scenes with kids in Tommyknockers where they're like reciting rhymes and things like that and like torturing each other that are genuinely chilling.
It's, it's about that town succumbing to the alien presence, so they all start doing weirdo shit in their homes.
And it's very psychological.
Tracy Lords being in it.
Yeah. So,
speaking of Stephen King vibes.
All right, what you got? What do you
got? I saw Summer of 84.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah. That's it? All right, that's your whole review?
Look, I thought it was pretty well made, but all the things it sets up, all the things I want it to deliver, it doesn't give you those things. That it's also in the unenviable position to come out after Stranger Things where every single thing now you're hitting is now just feels like a totally worn cliche suddenly, especially with that.
And they made it before that.
Yeah, I mean, but wedged between that and It, where you've got kids on bikes solving crimes, trying to be Monster Squad, each of the kids look like they're cast in a different movie because they're just so hitting each different trope, trying to make each kid look so different from each other that when they're together, I just don't buy it. It had stuff I liked about it, but I found it really actually quite one of the more frustrating films of the year in terms of what it sets up and what it delivers. It takes an interesting left turn towards the end that wasn't completely expected, and I think that maybe makes it just a little bit more unique for going against the grain, but it also adds to the fact that you're kind of don't get the nostalgia wave that you are kind of hoping the ride will deliver. I think you might have even said similar stuff months ago.
Yeah, because you saw it at a festival a while back.
Yeah.
Good soundtrack.
Yeah.
The soundtrack's rad.
Yeah, I like the filmmakers quite a bit. I think there's just a little bit of a disconnect in the nostalgia that they're going for. And I just felt the kind of Boy Who Cried Wolf, Neighbor Next Door as a serial killer thing was a bit long in the tooth. I think
it might have been a bit straight in terms of a story. Like there wasn't any, it was like, oh, that's your suspect, and
thank
then you go beep, beep, beep.
That is a perfect way of describing it. It's like point A to point B are very clean. Mm-hmm. It's a very straight line, you know, and I just wanted some more deviations to take us off on that.
But it's not a bad, like by no means is it a bad movie. It's more just like, oh, it's that you're going for a feeling. I think that's the danger of doing 80s movies. Mm. Throws back. And I don't want to diss them because it's Canadian, but when it's American small town nostalgia and spy people who didn't experience that, it always to me can be maybe a little off too.
Right.
I mean, who knows? Mm-hmm. But it had some nice parts. I thought the main kid was good. I thought the female neighbor was really good. But just they felt like they're in different movies. That's the most I've ever noticed that, where it's like, oh, I think you cast, you're trying too hard to cast a group of people to hit different types.
Yeah.
But even the way they dress, it's like there is no planet where this group of people hang out together.
Yeah.
It just doesn't exist. You know, whereas in Stranger Things, I bought it.
I saw it, a screening link of it a couple of weeks ago, and I was just, it was okay.
And you
did trivia
leave,
and I didn't stick around for the. I hosted the trivia before, but I didn't stick around to the screening. I was just okay with it. Like I didn't dislike it, but there wasn't anything I was really enthusiastic about.
Especially, I think it's those. It's a group of filmmakers, so it's three of them directing. Mm-hmm. I feel like and the originality of their first film, obviously.
Oh, Turbo Kid is amazing.
I think that's the thing. I think because I don't think they wrote this. I think it was a script. My guess is they're going to make something like that again. Completely original. This just isn't that.
Yeah.
Turbo Kid had so much voice and style.
So this wasn't their own script.
Uh-uh.
I don't think so. I think it was a directing.
Yeah.
A direct for hire.
I think it was a script that existed.
Yeah. I can say like it's a movie. Like I will not remember much about it in 10 years. I'm sure, but like I will remember a lot about Turbo Kid because it had something different.
Day in history 10 years from now.
Ask me about Summer of '84.
I have no memory of that at all.
None. So I'm going to talk about a TV show. So I stumbled on this one. When you're on Hulu, you know how it does like those little recommendations of because you like blank, you may also like. So it kept saying because you like Castle Rock, you may also like Ghosted. And
Ghosted.
And I had never heard of Ghosted, but I was like, meh, 30 minutes, I'll see what it is. So I started the first episode, and I binged the entire first season and absolutely loved it, and then got completely pissed off because I found out it has now been canceled. But 16 episodes exist on Hulu, and I highly recommend them. It is a half an hour comedy, and the whole setup is that it is there's this bureau. We'll call it kind of X-Files-ish bureau. And these two very haphazard guys kind of get roped into it in a very peculiar way, where one of the agents is literally like being pulverized, we'll call it, without revealing too much. And right before he dies, he screams, "Look up blank and blank. Only they can solve this." And so that's all that the agency is left with. And they look it up, and it's a disgraced security guard and this physics professor whose wife was supposedly abducted by aliens. And because he started telling everybody that, they considered him crazy. He got fired from the university he was looking at. His like name in the academia was shit on. And so he's now just this crazy guy working at Barnes & Noble telling everybody that his wife was abducted by aliens. And so the Bureau doesn't really even know why they're supposed to go seek these two people out, but they do. And these two people get recruited as agents. So then it kind of becomes, I'll call it a buddy cop movie, where you have this hardened security guard who doesn't take shit from anybody with this very kind of...
you're talking about two...
Like, yeah, you're talking about Adam Scott and Craig Robinson.
Yeah, Craig Robinson, two of the biggest comedians. I have no idea what you're talking
hilarious.
About. So
hilarious. It's just absolutely amazing. And I can't recommend it enough. It is kind of my perfect mix of horror, buddy cop drama, and humor. And it's all kind of in this X-Files environment. By episode two...
You know Rob Schraub's a director.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm getting... to that.
First name listed. Yeah. So, Rob Schraub.
My mic just went out.
What happened?
Yeah.
And Ernie.
No, there we go. All right.
Okay, we'll just
technical
tell him to,
our sound guy walked out.
So by episode number two, it becomes a Monster of the Week, where at this point you've got this unlikely duo who are now kind of dealing with Monster of the Week scenarios, and it's awesome. So episode three, they get this kind of, I'll call it a predator-ish being, gets trapped inside the office, and no one knows how to kill it, and all they know is that it's sucking liquid out of everything, including people, and they can't kill it. And it's making the predator noise eyes, but they also discover that like parts of it will break off and form these little lamprey things that look very much like Leviathan. Hmm. And the way that the creature was shot was just so clever, where it looked really scary, but they weren't even showing much. And so I'm watching this and I'm going, whoever shot this knows a shit ton about horror, because he's referencing movies, and the way that he's shooting this monster is really smart. This guy has a lot of background. I start Googling and I'm like, holy fuck, it's Rob Schraub.
Only the guy that would come up with Halloween 3 Part 2 could direct an episode of television like this.
Yeah. Yes. So
and
Rob
our cross-promoted podcast.
Yes. And so Rob Schraub is the host of Fear Initiative.
Oh, look at that.
Which is crazy because I'm watching it while I was – it's shorting out, guys.
Is it your mic or your headphones?
I don't know.
All right.
Can you guys
– Yes, I can hear you.
We're just going to keep going because Ernie's gone. Becca, and we're just going to put him on the spot.
Becca, you there? Wait a minute. I can't see Becca, guys.
Hold on, guys.
I can't see Becca.
Becca's soul is cutting out on us.
Where is Becca?
It's just
by aliens. Am I back now? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's a short. Sorry about that.
It's a good thing there's video.
So, yeah.
The camera says it's red. Is it off?
It's just Hal saying hello.
Let's just keep making fun of Ernie while he's gone.
Let's talk about our sound guy.
That's what you get.
Just pass me some pie.
Let's just eat some pie.
I thought he was joking, but
I need pie. Episodes, but
he's
check
number
out
three
Ghosted.
For Turek. Let's just keep him.
Yeah,
it's
on,
a lot of fun. It's X-Files as a comedy with amazing comedians. So definitely check it out.
I can see why it's canceled. No one's heard of it.
And I know, right?
It's all on Hulu now.
And I was reading when I was reading like stuff online about why it was canceled. I think that some of the reviews were very much like, well, it's referencing all of these things from prior generations, the buddy cop of the 80s. It's referencing, you know, horror movies from a long time ago. It's referencing the X-Files from the 90s. And are these hitting with contemporary millennials? And I don't have a fucking clue.
The answer
it's
is
hilarious.
It's on Hulu and no one knows it exists.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
So
but it was on Fox originally.
It was on Fox. Yeah. It ran. It launched on Fox last
Maybe
October.
Even heard of this thing.
Yeah, they did it last Halloween.
Let's go to the rafters. Have you guys heard of this?
Ghosted?
Okay, we got one out of three
Paula,
had heard
Paula
of it.
Paula likes it. Okay.
So one gives a thumbs up.
It's great. Check it out. It's hilarious.
And that's on Hulu?
Hulu.
Ghosted on Hulu.
Yes.
I revisited a film from 1994 that is now a Scream Factory special edition called Brain Scan.
Yeah. Fun.
I've only seen Brain Scan twice before this. And
you're a big Primus fan?
I do not like Primus.
I don't like Primus.
Sorry.
Les Claypool.
John Flynn directed this.
Yes.
John Flynn directed
Rolling Thunder, baby.
Yeah, Rolling Thunder. We got Ed Furlong in this. Yeah. And this basically came about like in the early 90s when they were trying to find the next Freddy Krueger.
What's
Freddy's
the weird
dead.
Gremlin dude's name?
Trickster.
Trickster,
who looks like who looks like a villain from Star Trek Next Generation.
Yes, he
With
really
better
does.
Hair.
Trickster, looks like
but he has the same hair as the alien on the wing from the Twilight Zone remake.
Yeah, he's got that kind
of
like,
same kind of
mohawk,
well-coiffy mohawk thing.
Yeah, that guy's good. I think he's a good actor.
No, he's very good in this. He's very good. My appreciation for Brain Scan went up several fold, I have to say.
Nice.
Andrew Kevin Walker of Seven fame wrote this in Sleepy Hollow.
I forgot he wrote this. Actually.
Yeah, he did.
I remember that. I love this.
You got Frank Langella playing the investigator.
That's right.
And basically the concept is Ed Furlong and his best friend are Fangoria reading horror nerds with a fascination with video games, and they find an ad in the back of Fango for Brain Scan. Yes. And it's basically a kind of next level game that you get as a CD-ROM, and you pop it in your CD-ROM, it plays on your TV, and then it sends signals out of the TV and gives you an experience unlike any other, which is you are in the body of a killer. So Ed Furlong straps in, plays the game, and over the course of 14 minutes, he experiences an actual murder. Is it Ed Furlong, or was it just the video game?
You know what it reminds me of more than another video game one? It reminds me a little of 976 Evil. It's better made than 976
it's
Evil.
There's
something about the vibe of it that reminds me of that. I don't know why.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
I mean, that's not a game. But
There was Strange Days came to mind, too. Catherine Bigelow's Strange Days, where you're like seeing through the eyes of a killer.
Lawnmower Man
was a bit more serious than I remember Brain Scan.
But Brain Scan stands on its own. And it's... I think it's a really well done movie. It's got a weird tone to it. It's just, and I think it comes through in the photography where it just feels very bleached out and very bleak, and it's not a very joyful film. The score relies on one theme throughout the whole movie, and it's a really cool, catchy theme.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make the whole. I mean, every once in a while when there's a murder, it kicks into full on metal, heavy metal. But it's just one of those movies that I kind of dismissed when it came out in the 90s, just because I was like, Trickster will never be Freddy Krueger. And then, you know what? Years later, I have an appreciation.
Says the guy who like, what was the one last week we were talking about that he liked?
Oh, Doom Asylum.
Yeah, Doom Asylum, motherfucker.
That guy's identical
you know what?
Freddy Krueger.
Is Brain Scan better than Doom Asylum?
Yes, it is.
But does Doom Asylum deserve to be seen? Yes, it does. Okay.
To our listeners out there, including our friends, Elric and I warned you about Doom Asylum.
And yet everyone's watching it.
And then Ryan's endorsement.
I did my job.
I got a text from one of our mutual friends that said, you, Ryan. I was going to pass, and then Ryan.
He blood hooked them again.
Blood hooked him.
Ryan and his blood hooks.
I'm going to blood hook him left and right. But Brain Scan, check it out if you haven't seen it. It's just got a good air of mystery to it. What's missing from it? And they set it up at the very beginning. You know, Ed Furlong was in a car wreck where he lost his mother. But it doesn't really come back into play on an emotional level later on. And it kind of ties up.
That is such an executive note.
No, it's just like you want to set it up. And it's like, oh, you want me to feel bad for Ed Furlong because he's got fucked up knees and his mom is dead? Like, give me some sort of...
Wow.
Whoa.
16-year-old turret.
Give me some more, like, you know, a journey, a little
some more
arc.
Empathy.
Give me a little arc for that, you know? You don't just set that up and then just go... Bye. You
but
don't just let that go
away. The
trickster
shows up, and we don't need that device anymore.
Becca, no, we need this device. Come on now. Come on. Andrew Kevin Walker, I'm going to give you notes someday.
I'm still shocked about the Primus comment. I got to be honest. At least I have Becca on the corner.
The great thing is that this is very distinctly 90s, because it's like, I love... Someone's going to do an essay on like just horror fans in horror films, because this guy... The guy who plays Edward Furlong's best friend is clearly 29.
Yeah.
He's got like a Freddy Krueger shirt on. He's got a denim vest on, some flannel wrapped around his pant, you know, his waist. And he just says like really dumb things. But I was like, oh, so that's what people thought horror fans were in 1994. Got it. Okay.
That's interesting.
They didn't know that they were just nerdy kids laying
Brain Scan, baby.
I remember liking it. I haven't seen the new release.
Though. Yeah, I want to check it out.
Now, and there's a lot of special features in the interview of the Trickster on it.
There's one more that we all said we'd watch this week. So
I watched it.
The Changeling. Did we do it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I watched it like 2 weeks ago, but I can talk about it now.
Let's talk about Changeling because you cannot.
No, I didn't get a chance to watch
it. Eat your pie. We'll talk about Changeling.
Remember we made a plan?
I had to watch Doom Asylum one more time.
Doom Asylum or The Changeling. All right.
Well, either way.
I don't want Doom Asylum.
We don't need to go too much in story anyway, but I really think it's going to be one of the releases of the year. It's just a gorgeous movie. Mm-hmm. It's really classical, but it's also really innovative. I like Medak continually places the camera in really surprising ways. Like, it's this very kind of traditionally classic film, but then suddenly there's a camera in the back of the ambulance, or there's like this awesome dollying chasing George C. Scott shot where it's like going around a spiral staircase. And there's just like moments that elevate this movie from just being a traditional ghost story to being something that's actually really memorable about kind of pain. Mm-hmm. It feels like a very, you know, George C. Scott's a real deal, obviously Bucky from Dr. Strangelove, you know, a real deal actor. And in this, I feel like that kind of sad, melancholy feeling to kind of keep that for the whole movie, but give it kind of a positive twist. Because it's actually kind of a positive, like so many movies would just be, oh, sad sack, and he wants to communicate with his dead wife. It's like, no, he actually takes on to help someone from beyond.
You,
and I think that's really quite a beautiful...
You get that really shocking opening scene, which I remember seeing
it's
again. I was like,
crazy.
Man, I forgot about how horrible...
Oh, it's the shot of him stuck in the way he's stuck in the telephone booth.
And
in slow motion,
like
he just
kind of...
It's actually the movie I likened it to straight after was... which I hadn't really thought about when I first saw it, was it is very similar to Don't Look Now, but the difference is like you feel completely miserable watching Don't Look Now. Somehow in this, I think because the difference is one of them listens to their intuition. They're the same character almost, but Donald Sutherland fails to listen to his intuition and everything is doomed from then on. This character actually listens to the signs from beyond and tries to do something about it. And I don't know, I think this is going to be one of those films that really lasts the test of time as a classic horror movie. And this release is great. The extras are really strong. I didn't listen to the commentary, but everything else was really cool.
Commentary I haven't gone to yet, but Severin transfer looks terrific. Severin did a terrific job with all. There's like a scholar talking about kind of a real life haunting that inspired it. It was great to see Mick Garris on there because he did an incredible episode with Peter Medic when this a month ago, I think.
Yeah, especially for the non horror stuff, you know.
And so hearing him talk about the film and how he felt about it when it came out and kind of how it led to Masters of Horror, because. I think you say this a lot, Elric, where it's like some of the best horror films are from filmmakers that aren't specifically horror directors. Like
they're just drawn
one.
To the material for that.
And I don't
one,
know if he had any. Did he have anything? I mean, he went afterwards.
Yeah,
he
afterwards
did
he did
like Species 2 and
no,
some
I don't
other
think
thing.
So. No,
but this was his first like horror film
yeah.
out of his filmography,
and
so,
it's fun when they go for it because
yeah.
it's not just safe. There's like a lot of like I said, classical things, but then there's just moments yeah. that feel like a young person. Made it.
It still yeah. feels really classy, even in yeah. the subject matter, because it's about a professor and he's a composer
yeah.
and they're dealing with the historical society. So it feels like really classy all the while that, you know, and there's a lot about architecture and things like that in there. So yeah, it feels really classy.
But if I lose my family, I'm not moving into a big house. Like, you're watching that going, wait a minute, you just lost your family, you move into a giant fucking house.
I actually like that because it made it gothic. Like,
it definitely
became a gothic tale at that point.
I don't get it, is what I'm saying. Like, it's one of those plot points in a movie where, like,
I don't know. That house is dope. I would live there.
See, I don't
like,
think I could, yeah.
Yeah, I yeah, felt it was very much like drowning yourself in the caverns. Like,
yeah.
there was so much in that house to explore. And, you know, and he seemed amused by the paintings and what it used to be in the history of the house. So I think that there was definitely,
it's
like,
it's definitely tied to his character well.
In.
Yeah, I can
yeah,
see why it's
know,
tied to his character.
I don't know if they talked much about it. I haven't listened to the commentary yet, but I know on Mick's episode, he talked about how Peter Medic had talked that, you know, he had a wife that had committed suicide before this film, and he
Medic
was,
did?
Yeah, and so
oh,
he was actually pulling from his own grief. That's why The Changeling was so
wow.
personal to him.
Uh-huh.
He directed it from a place where he was George C. Scott's
that
character.
That makes a lot more sense than
and yeah, I mean, it's not common knowledge, but if you watch the movie with that in mind, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
So,
oh, that's
yeah.
really interesting.
Yeah.
So he's working
yeah.
through it.
No, I'd always, for some reason in my brain, and I think it's because they all came out around the same time, I'd always merged the Sentinel burnt offerings in this movie together. And I could tell you things that made them different, but I kind of just melded them. So it was really nice to rewatch. It is just a masterpiece of a film. It did make me question why ghosts always have to be dicks. Like, when they're trying to get you to do something, it's always like, well, it's trying to pull me into a well, but it just wants me to find its body. Like, they always seem to be kind of abrasive dicks when they're trying to get you to do something. So, yeah.
You sound ghosted.
I'm totally ghosted.
Bring it around.
Rebecca, this is like the foundation for ghosts being dicks.
I know,
I mean, like
but...
The Ring and all these other films that followed in the Changeling's
but
wake
see,
were all...
they were all like... I don't, this one, the boy wasn't as vengeful. Like the Grudge and the Ring, they're vengeful. Like they just want to kill everybody. This one, the kid didn't want to kill everybody.
Yeah,
he was just,
in this story.
He was the victim and he was trying to get George C. Scott to help him. Or the little girl, which made me question, like, if you're trying to get that little girl to help you, you don't appeal a, like, you know, freaky and trying to pull her into the floor. You say, hi, little girl, I don't want to scare you or anything.
Like, you have a lot of ghost rules.
I do. Ghost rules here. Yeah.
But you know what? I would see the Grudge.
The Grudge.
A very 90s ghost story.
Too. I would probably buy the soundtrack on vinyl as well.
I assumed it would be something like Street Trash, but not quite as good. The Grudge.
But yeah, Changeling gets big thumbs up. It's,
yeah,
it's definitely
it's
a purchase to me. Like,
I think it's
going to
be one of the top releases of the year by far.
Definitely. And I hope it does well for Severin, because that's the kind of release you can kind of buoy you what you do. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think there's plenty to talk about, but I say we curb it.
Yeah,
we'll come back
at
the end.
We have a wonderful guest, and I want to get him on here as soon as possible.
Yep.
So let's take a break here from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Tonight's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Fright Rags. Fright Rags is the number one source for horror t-shirts with especially curated collections created by renowned horror artists. They offer the best art and the best quality anywhere. New this week at Fright Rags, they have brand new Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 tees and apparel and pins, and I think I saw socks in there. Fresh from Midsummer Scream, we have the new Slashback Video VHS tribute shirts. Yes, that's a shameless plug. The awesome new Warriors line is now available. There's also a They Live line with multiple t-shirts and enamel pins. And also, and this got me excited, a House and House 2 t-shirts. I'm going to be wearing that House
Madness.
2 t-shirt.
House 2 t-shirts.
Proudly.
Wow.
Head to FrightRags.com now. That's Fright-Rags.com. You can enter the code SUMMERSHOCK10. Again, that's SUMMERSHOCK10 at checkout to get 10% off your entire order. And it better be all House 2 related. Again, that's SUMMERSHOCK10. Head to Fright-Rags.com now.
Blumhouse is proud to present our newest podcast, Fear Initiative, a weekly horror role-playing game podcast. Join Game Master David Ian McKendry as he takes players Morgan Peter Brown, Kara Mandel, Jeff Seidman, Megan Duffy, Rob Schraub, Josh Forbes, and Clark Wolf through a weekly journey of horror-inspired role-playing adventures. Creepy dolls, soulless killers, and bloodthirsty beasts. This role-playing game is scary as shit, with occasional music numbers. Tune in every week to hear what horrific quest awaits. Blumhouse's Fear Initiative just launched this week on the Blumhouse Podcast Network and is now available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and more. Please find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram under Fear Initiative.
All right, we are back, and
we brought you a birthday present.
This is a true birthday gift for
yes.
you, Rob.
All right. I've got one a fat tire here. I see that. But I'm celebrating my birthday with Mr. Udo Kier.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Salud, sir.
Cheers.
Wow. Incredible.
Got her.
Dad,
my LaCroix.
I can't top this birthday, quite frankly.
Yeah,
already.
Pretty great.
His amazing title on the bottle says, Fat Tire. Belgium White.
Listen, if you're willing to sponsor us, Fat Tire, we've already got the promo from Udo.
Yeah.
So there
you
go.
I think you should take over from the most interesting man in the world, you know, that guy from the beer commercial. I'd rather be Udo, because I think you've probably led a much more interesting life than that guy.
I think it would be more interesting.
I did Budweiser commercial.
Oh. Yeah.
I did the Miller Lite, which was great. I was the devil. Uh-huh. And hell was frozen over. And all my little devils were ice skating. And the beer line was running to hell. And then I had long metal fingernails. And I said, how can this be possible? And, and when all the little devils look away, I lick the beer line and my tongue got stuck and it says Miller Lite.
The most American of beers.
I will drink to that. Okay.
That's hilarious.
Here because you're in town. You live in Palm Springs, but you're here in town to promote Puppet Master.
Yes.
The Littlest Reich.
And
did you have fun at the premiere last night?
Yes. I saw the film the first time. Saw it. I was coming back from about 2 months ago. I came back from doing a great film in Brazil with Sonia Braga. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped in New Orleans, but I was too tired, so I just went to the opening and I wanted to wait till the film comes here last night. I think it's amazing, these puppets, because it's so bloody. Mm-hmm. And I accepted the film for the reason Greg Zahler, who is the writer.
Yeah.
I made with him 2 films in just short time. I did Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Which you were terrific at.
Yeah, you were just
talking about that.
Which was the most evil text I ever had to say on screen. And then I did the new one, which goes now to Venice with Mel Gibson.
Mm-hmm. The head dragged over concrete?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And then he called me and said, I wrote the puppet. He's a very good writer.
Yeah,
he writes good novels.
Yeah.
And the dialogue is wonderful. And he said, unfortunately, I will not direct it, but I chose 2 directors from Sweden. I saw their work. And they were the directors. So the Puppet Master, I remember only the first one. And I remember when the Puppet Master was painting the little doll, and then he takes his hand on the doll's head and says, I will take care of you. I said, oh, that's good. So I didn't see number 2, number 3, number 4, number 5, number 6, number 7.
It's quite a lot of them.
They're still going.
But yesterday, I think you cannot go further than that.
Yeah.
I mean, the puppet in the stomach coming out with the baby.
We were dancing around.
Yeah, we were dancing.
But you just threw it out there, sure.
Yeah.
That's a little
the movie.
Bit, I have never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
And the cord, the bloody cord is still on the body. And the man who takes the bathroom and the helicopter puppet. Boom, and then,
yeah, we were talking about that earlier.
Wow. I think that's one of the highlight moments in the film. I like the film. I liked Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Barbara Crampton. Yeah.
I want to meet her. I want to meet her. She did a very, very good job explaining the whole thing. And I was a little bit surprised at the end of the film when they drive the car to the building and I come up. It's not me.
It's not you. You didn't realize you came back in the movie and it wasn't you.
And that would have been nice to have a very funny line.
Would you have put all that makeup on and done that bit?
Of course.
How
really?
It took 4 hours.
So, now, was it all like practical? Was that what you actually look like? Or was there CG augmentation?
No. That was the makeup. I was sitting in the middle, which was amazing. You sit as an actor, you sit in the middle of a room on a chair. You have two makeup person who talk about the last football game they saw and their finger dipping in paint and color. And then you feel them pressing your body and your face and everything. And then I did not want to see the progress. I just felt it. And then after 4 hours, I said, can I see a mirror? And then they showed me the mirror and I said, ooh, horrible. So, but that was good. And I liked the beginning scene with the two girls. So yeah. I think it was very, very funny.
Very, very wonderful. Your delivery is terrific. Yeah.
And I will do another horror film with him. I don't tell you which one, with Sala. He wrote a novel and he's writing now the script.
Okay.
Oh, great.
So he's very good. He's very good in writing dialogue and it's a whole new group.
Yeah.
The producer, Dallas
Sonia. Great guy.
They're very nice. It's not like, they like films.
Yeah.
It's not like in America, that's why, I mean, you know where I'm from.
Yeah.
From this, what they showed there, the Nazi town. In Europe, I mean, I worked with Fassbinder, Herzog, Wim Wenders, Lars, and all these people. Then there is never the pressure of making a movie to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. They make the movie. People like it, good. If they don't like it, also good, next movie. But in America, it is unfortunately all, it's an industry.
Yeah.
It's the money, and you pay a lot to the actors because they bring so and so many people into the cinema. I mean, that's what they calculate. And I prefer the Gus Van Sant or something.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about, oh, I hope the first weekend it makes 45 million.
Right.
And then we're there. So who cares?
So Zoller is one of those writers, filmmakers that you would work with anytime he called, pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did he tell you which role of yours it was that got him to reach out to you in the first place?
No, I think he is a very kind of a film person. And I mean, if you like films, everybody has seen Andy Warhol's Dracula and Frankenstein, which was... Imagine 3 weeks shooting in 3D for $300,000 a movie. I mean, when I made the videos with Madonna, they cost more than the whole film of Dracula or Frankenstein.
Yeah. Wow. Again, because that was super early in launching your career, but how did you meet Paul Morrissey? Because I know there's a misconception with those movies that Andy Warhol did, you know, direct them, but he never had anything to do with it, particularly except for producing them, I assume. But how did you actually meet Paul and get involved in his films?
Good story.
I figured there was.
I'm trying.
He's got his beer.
I'm trying the Fat Tire. Cheers.
Tasty.
We're all drinking right now, just so you know, at that pause.
Everyone's drinking.
Silence.
We have to explain the situation. It's radio. Yes, we're all drinking.
What do you think, Udo? Is that okay?
A bit strange.
I think that needs to be the logo, Fat Tire. It's strange.
It's very strange. So I was, first of all the stories I will tell you, I'm a very lucky man. And I have never in my life, not even David Lynch, when I had dinner with him and Isabella Rossellini, I have never asked the director, I would like to work with you. Imagine I said to David Lynch, I would like to work with you, and he would say to me, who doesn't? I would feel like shit. And I say, I like your movies.
Yeah.
Of course, which I do. So I was on an airplane from sitting next to a man plane was from Rome to Munich, a man with a beard, and like American always when you start a conversation, they say, what do you do? So I said, I'm an actor. But when I was at the beginning in 1971, so when I said I'm an actor, I had already my hand on my headshot, and I said, here, I'm an actor. And he looked at the photograph and he said, very interesting, give me your number. And he took out his American passport and wrote my number on the last page. And there was no other number. And I thought, wow, he write my number on the last page. Yeah. And I said, who are you? He said, I'm Paul Morrissey. I'm a film director for Andy Warhol. And I knew Andy Warhol at that time was very famous in Europe because they could show the film Trash and Flesh uncensored because it was art. So you could have a man on screen with an erection, but it was okay because it was art. Yeah. So, and then a couple of months later, I got a call and, hey, it's Paul from New York. You remember me from the plane? I said, yeah, I do. I am making a film for Carlo Ponti, you know, the husband of Sophia Loren, and Frankenstein in 3D, and I have a little role for you. And I said, wow, thank you. What do I play? He said, Frankenstein. So I said, wow, he's crazy. Didn't believe it. And I did the film in 3 weeks. It was a lot improvised. In Cinecittà. Mm-hmm. And then actually somebody else supposed to be Dracula. And I went, it was wonderful, Cinecittà. Fellini was shooting there.
Oh, wow.
All kind of overdeveloped breasts and tall people of 20 feet, I don't know, they all walk around in the cantina. And I was sitting there having a little bit of wine, being a little bit sad because, like Andy said, everybody is famous for 15 minutes. So my 15 minutes were gone because the next day, gone the film. And then Paul Morrissey came and said, he looked at the wine and he said, well, I guess we have a German Dracula. And I said, who? He said, you. But you have to lose 10 pounds in 1 week. And I said, it's not a problem. So I only had salad leaves and water. And when the day came of shooting, I had to sit in a wheelchair. I had no power. And so it's in the film, my entrance in the film is in a wheelchair because I had no power. And then I got power slowly. But it was very... very nice, and I preferred Dracula because Frankenstein was so much the 3D, and you know, it's horrible 3D. Mm-hmm.
Plus, you had to play with all those body parts.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Those innards.
And then I had to scream, Otto to no life, you have to fuck death in the gallbladder.
That's the one.
There it is.
That was the line.
Yeah.
We got it in person, guys.
By Blood of the Whores, you got an even better line than the next one. So
the next one I have. Brilliant line. Yes.
You also had a great director in acting in that film. You had Vittorio De Sica.
Yes.
That must have been interesting.
And it was he didn't speak English, so he learned very, very profound, the whole speech. Dracula. Dracula. It sounds like a wine. Yes. And he was great, great actor. I mean, a great filmmaker. Not only actor. I mean, he made great films with Sophia Loren when she was very innocent and young. Mm. And then when I played Dracula, which I preferred, also 3 weeks, and there was the famous line, Otto, I need the blood of a virgin. The blood of these whores are killing me. That was that famous line. And for me, these two films were important because I entered from regular newspaper into high gloss. I was all of a sudden Vogue, and Andy took pictures with Andy with his dachshund called Archibald. So I held Archibald and Andy. It was a glamour in Paris and everywhere. And Paul Morrissey was the director, mm-hmm. and he doesn't like to hear that Andy Warhol had anything to do with it. Mm. But Andy was there for, first of all, the truth is, Andy Warhol discovered Paul Morrissey. So that's for his films. So you cannot, after you made little films, Andy made films himself.
Yeah.
Right. Like Blue and things like that. But he did it in his own way. I mean, he put the camera on the people, went out and came back every 10 minutes and just changed. Viva and Louis Walden, they're just in bed having sex and talking. And then he came back in, took a new film role in and went out. So, but still, or he did the Empire State Building, 24 hours.
Yeah.
He was a
minimalist.
He was a great, great, great artist. Nobody ever reached that up till today, but he did. And he was a new, I mean, he said to me, let's go out tonight. I have to meet Jacqueline Kennedy. I said, well, Jacqueline Kennedy? So we have to meet Josephine Baker. She's opening a restaurant. And everybody, and Josephine, I'll never forget, Josephine had a kind of a amazing thing on with diamonds all and green. It was all like, hello, like, or like Grace Jones in her club, La Vie en Rose. I went with Andy and there was Kiss Haring. It was New York at that time in 73. It was wild. Totally different than it is now. Now you go on Broadway walking and so many people, you have to put your hands on your pocket for your telephone and your wallet because everybody...
Too many people. I left New York because there's too many people.
So was that before, in terms of your timeline, did you already know filmmakers like Fassbender before you started doing those films, or was that afterwards, after you already... were a known actor?
I know Fassbender. I met him when he was 15, and I was 16, and we met in a working class bar in Cologne, and not talking about movies. And then later on, I went to England because I was born 14th of October 1944, the end of the war, and I was born very, I'm sure you read it, very dramatically.
Yeah, I've seen The Kingdom. well, it doesn't get much more dramatic than that.
It was, because to make it short, my mother was on the way to the hospital. I was born, and then the nurse were collecting all the new babies to clean them. And my mother said, could I have him a little bit longer? Yes. And then my mother said there was a bombing, and the walls came down, and the nurse jumped over all the newborn children. And... my mother was lucky. Her bed was in a corner, so architecturally she was more secure. And she told me when I was 14 or 15, she told me the story. She held me with one hand and the other she made a hole. And sometimes I have this vision at night that I see a ruffle of a building and a white hand is waving. That's what she did. And we got freed. I don't know who freed me, the British or the Americans, so I'm nice to both of them.
Hedge your bets.
you never know. And that was, and so we had no money, and I couldn't go to high school. So I went to London. And job when I was, with permission of my mother, when I was 18 or 19, I went to London. And one day some guy came in and I was very handsome. I mean, not like now, but a young man, 21, blue eyes and black hair. And the guy came and said, we're doing a movie. We would like to offer you the main part in a movie. I said, I don't know. I cannot do that.
Oh, so you were really discovered. We weren't trying to be an actor. Yeah.
No, I wanted.
That's amazing.
I grew up near a company called Bayer, who makes aspirin and
Alka-Seltzer. Oh, yeah.
Famous.
Wow.
And I was, as a boy, when I was on the bicycle, I was so impressed of seeing the big Bayer. So I wanted to learn English and then French to be a correspondent and be working for them and be sent around the world. I didn't like Germany. Yeah. Germany was horrible that time. So then I made the film. I said, I don't know how to do it. So what they did, I didn't know it was CinemaScope. So I didn't know what CinemaScope was. And then we made the film, and they shot all my scenes with a long lens. And I didn't know what a long lens was. Yeah. And all I did, I come out of the water and I only was looking for the camera. And I thought, why are they so far away from me? But I didn't know that I was in close-up on CinemaScope. So I got, the film came out, it was 45 minutes. In England at that time, they had always a long short film and a feature film the same time. Mm-hmm. And then I got right away William Morris' contract around the world, and they wrote a new phase of cinema. So as a poor boy, I liked the attention. Yeah. So I got the attention, and then I made a film. I got the main part right away in a film in Vienna, and then came a film which is up till today a cult film called Mark of the Devil,
which had vomit bags.
Yes, and they were very clever.
Yeah,
so they had not only saying outside, if you have a weak heart, don't see that movie. They gave vomiting bags, which today they cost $300 on the internet.
I have some. I have two of them.
She collects vomit bags. Believe
I should. Sign them for you.
I should have brought them. They're framed in my office. I have them behind glass.
And so that was the first film with Herbert Lom. I learned acting from actors. Yeah. And I was a very lucky man, as I said before, that I also worked with great actors. So I could always watch them. And that was the second film I did. And then came one after the other. Then when I was in London, I opened a magazine. There was a photograph, a double page of Fassbinder, Rainer Werner Fassbinder, the genius and the alcoholic. And I thought, oh, that's Rainer from when I was 16.
So you remembered him
16.
As a teen. Yeah, that's wild.
Because we did not talk about film. He went to school and I learned in an office. And then I went to see him and he offered me a film. Called Fox and His Friends.
That's my favorite of his films.
But I didn't do it.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
I didn't want to do it because there are certain directors in the world when they're so talented and you accept a small role of like a hairdresser. Then in the next film, you be a window decorator. Then in the next film, you sell flowers. So I said, no, I don't lie. He never forgave me. And then he offered me the second film called Station Master's Wife, and this I took, One Woman Between Three Men, and I'm the last one, and I get her.
And he was making like six films a year at some of that period.
He was kind of a difficult person, and he knew he could only have his friends around him when they were under contract.
Sounds like Hitchcock, right?
He made the last, then we made Lili Marleen, then we made Lola, which I prefer. He preferred it too. Lili Marleen was the first time he had money. And Giancarlo Giannini, Hanna Schigula. And then when the finish, and he told the producers they were forbidden to come to the studio. They had to wait outside the studio in Munich at the Bavarian studio. Nice. And then he said to us, let's make a small movie now, Lola. And it was a much better film because already the Lili Marleen was already getting the second most expensive German film after the war, after Tim Dran or whatever it's called, Schlöndorff. And then we did Alexanderplatz. And I mean, not only that he was directing, Alexanderplatz, for example, were 14 books, scripts, and he wrote them all. So he wrote
First of the 10-hour miniseries? Like the things that are pretty common now, back then were pretty groundbreaking. And that leads to also the big TV, because I mean, The Kingdom, I think, is one of the great horror television things. But was the work with Fassbinder what von Trier was drawn to when you met?
No. I met, again, lucky man.
Yeah.
I went to a festival in Mannheim. I had made a short film myself called The Last Trip to Harrisburg, where I play an American soldier and a woman, and they're sitting in a train, they talk to each other, they go into Harrisburg, to the end of the world, they go. Mm. And Fassbinder liked it, and he did the voice. So he did the voice of the woman and the man. I mean, the same voice. And that film was in Mannheim, an intellectual festival in Germany, was invited with Lars von Trier's first film, Element of Crime. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And we all went there, and Lars had not arrived. And I said to the American directors, well, we can go home. Whoever made that film is going to win. And the American said, you think so? I said, yes, I do. He did. And I went, because it was so new and so deep, profound in kind of the way, the dialogue and everything. And I went to the director of the festival. I said, I'm sorry, there's one person I would like to meet, the person who made that film. And I expected somebody like Kubrick or Fassbinder scratching themselves, being dressed in black and in a bad mood. And there comes this student, young boy, and to meet me. He said, I don't like festival. He said, I'm the way here. And it was, I think, his second festival. On the way here, he said, I walked on a square and there was a church and the door was open and the music came outside. And I looked and there was a person in the first row and I went slowly in and there was a woman who was crying. He said, that's what I like. Yeah. I said, okay.
We can be friends.
Okay. And then we talked and I got him actually... I went with him, there was no cell phone. I got him to the post office and called the producer I knew. And I said, you were in Cannes, right? And you saw Element of Crime, yes. And you didn't buy it? No. I said, you're crazy. So they bought it. So I got him the German.
Wow, that's a big deal.
And then months later, he called me and said, I'm doing a script by Carl Theodor Dreyer, Medea. Yeah. And he said, I want you to play the husband of Medea. He said, you don't look like a Vikinger, so don't wash your hair anymore for a month. Don't shave. Don't clean yourself. I want that you come here in a month dirty and present yourself. You're the king of the Vikinger. So I looked really strange. I was a little smelly in the airplane. And I went there and I got the part. That was our first work. And his wife was having a baby, and he said, I want that you be the godfather of my baby.
Aww.
And he said, not for the gifts. He said, but if I have an accident tomorrow with my wife, you're responsible to bring up my child. Wow. I said, wow, thank you. In Germany, it's only gifts for Christmas, for birthdays. And then we made a lot of films together, and then when he said to me, I have a nice gift for you, I want that you be born on screen. You be the first actor ever coming. I said, how can I be born on screen? He said, you will see. We built this woman, and you be inside your stomach. And so the day came, and it was really very, very strange, because they took my hair off and put some blood and some slime on my head. And I was lying on a piece of wood with four wheels. And I was inside the stomach. And he said, we cannot rehearse it. It's very expensive, the model. You have to do it. So then I said, okay. So I went in the stomach, lying on my back on a piece of wood with wheels. And then I heard the word, action. So I tried to get out and I couldn't get out. I said, this is not possible. So I went more back and then come out. And then my head came out. And of course, I go like,
it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
Can we get, is this a clip on YouTube that we can
I'm sure it will be. But it's actually true. It's hard to shock people, I think.
Yeah.
And that was a truly shocking moment in a show that was already very weird. But that was one of the things you could never imagine seeing. And there it is.
And then, of course, I play, if you remember, I play also the father of the devil, who's the father of the baby, who's the devil.
Yeah.
And he comes to the hospital to remind the baby that he is the baby of the devil. And the baby grows and grows. They have to put two beds together, and at the end, they strap him against the wall, And he begs, the baby begs the mother more. I had to speak Danish. Mother, mother, where were you in Danish? More, wo war du? And then at the end, of course, she cuts all the thing and I fall off the wall in her arms and die. But but he, Lars von Trier is, I'm, again, comes the word, I'm a lucky man. There are directors in the world, Lars von Trier, Gus von Sant, Werner Herzog, Fassbinder, Wim Wenders, they cannot make a bad film. Mm. They can only make a film people don't like, yeah. But they cannot make, also the new film I'm in with Joaquin Phoenix, Don't worry, he won't get far by foot.
The, yeah, the Gus Van Sant one. Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
How many films have you made with Van Sant then? Four?
He discovered... new story.
Segway.
So, again, lucky man. I was in Berlin at the festival, and a young director came and said, hello, my name is Gus Van Sant. I have a little film here, which I made for $20,000, Malanoche. And I'm preparing a film with River Phoenix and Keanu Reeves. I had never heard of them, of course, living in Germany. And I said, oh, great. And I said, my God, they always talk at festivals. They are lonely. They have to offer. They have to offer people something to get a conversation. And no, he is, he was honest what he said. Yeah. And he got me to America, got my work permit, got my SAG, which I'm very happy to be a member of SAG because now I get my pension for the rest of my life. Yeah. And so he discovered me for, we did the film and River Phoenix was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And then he made a film which people didn't like so much, called Even Cowgirls Get the Blues with Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
And now we did this film. And he has a place in Palm Springs now.
Yeah.
And 2 months ago, I invited him. I said, I would like to invite you because everything I have in America now, I owe to you.
No,
because you were the one, an actor in Berlin, bring him over to be Hans. Because in America, your name is always Hans.
Yeah,
in Japan, is Hansmann. So, so you're always the Hans. And in Don't Worry, You Won't Get Far By Foot, my name is Hans. So I'm the same character, actually, because both stories are in Portland. So I'm an alcoholic now in a meeting because I lost everything to alcohol. And Hans tells the story why he's there. So all the directors likes this. Everything came like that. Now the latest film, I got a call. Hello, my name is Alexander Payne.
Oh, wow.
And I want to come to Palm Springs with my wife to have lunch with you. And I said, okay. And of course, 10 minutes later, I was on the IMDb.
Who is this guy?
Wow. Oh. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he came and he was talking, not about movies. And a week later, I got the contract to be in Downsizing. And I was very happy to play with Christoph Waltz because we have never worked together. Mm-hmm. And we, in a way, we're similar.
Yeah.
See, you see, there's two ways in life. You can be a gangster and have a gun and you can say, I'm going to kill you! But you can also have the gun on the table, clean your fingernails, and you say, you know what? When I'm done, I'm going to kill you. And then people say, oh, that was horrible.
Yeah.
But that's film.
Much creepier.
What I like about this is you still get excited about film and filmmaking.
And acting. And
the sense of discovery of working with new filmmakers.
Yeah.
I love that. I love
that. Yeah, I have now. I had, sorry, the beer.
Oh, drink break, everyone.
Yep, there we go.
Chip.
When Udo drinks, we drink.
Chip.
There we go.
I have two films now. In next week, I might go in Venice. one with Zahler, with Mel Gibson, but the film officially invited called The Mountain with Ty Sheridan and Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And I play an ice instructor on the ice.
Oh, ice skating?
Ice skating, and of course.
They had Did you have to learn to ice skate for it?
No, but the body had to. Not my brain. I just had to float around. And so that was there. I had two films this year in Berlin in competition, Italian one and Gus Van Sant. So
you don't slow down.
No, they're interesting projects. I have seven films coming out now. I just made a film with Geraldine Chaplin. And it's wonderful because when you work with Geraldine Chaplin, and we were partners, and all of a sudden you embrace her, and for a second you think, my God, I'm holding the daughter of Charlie Chaplin.
Film history.
It's true. So that's, and now I have one film in Croatia, maybe. The contract is not signed. with Geraldine Chaplin. And then I have another film in Luxembourg, a horror film, and playing a father. And so, you know, it's like, I like the high desert. I have a ranch in Morongo, and I have a plastic horse, and the plastic horse name is Max von Sydow, because Max is such a strong man. And when I
that's an amazing
Does Max know
fact.
This?
I think you heard it because when Lars von Trier was his birthday, I did a little video for him, and Max was standing there, and I had some hay in my hand and a cowboy hat, cowboy hat, and I said, "Hey, Max!" So, and I think he saw it, because it's a life-size horse, and it looks for photographs. It looks real. Yeah. So I have a horse. I cannot have a real horse, maybe in 10 years. So I have, then I have a barn in Yucca Mesa, which is beautiful. Oh, so I have an idea. I want to make my first horror film myself. Yeah. And I can't tell the story because nobody can copy me. the film is called Homage. And the first homage is to Alfred Hitchcock. I'm the old lady in a rocking chair, and I have a tape recorder on my knees, learning how to hold a knife under the wall, under the shower. So, and then
perfect comes, for your birthday.
I'm on my way.
And then comes the John Wayne. Mm-hmm. It's my horse.
Yeah.
And the people all, he lives, John Wayne, Abby John Wayne, lives with a plastic horse. And he tells stories, but with other actors he experienced and tells all to the horse. And all the helicopter shot, all the neighbors pointing there, and the police comes and arrests him. And at the end, the police say, "What's your name?" And he says, "Wayne. John Wayne." So, then comes the homage for David Lynch, all the telephone conversations, like in Mulholland Drive or something,
the mystery man,
with the little lipstick, and says, "I'm in your house
already."
So that's. I'm going to do that for fun. Because I will get an amazing cameraman.
Yeah.
And I don't need a director. I do that because my idea.
I love that you have John Wayne writing Max von Sydow. The idea of John Wayne writing Max von Sydow is kind of like film history.
It all comes
together.
Like, and not so fast, Max. Not so fast.
Wow.
And so that's what happen. I like the desert. I like Palm Springs because in Palm Springs, I'm 74. In Palm Springs, they're older than me. And when I go to a restaurant, they say, "Young man, can you pass me the salt?" I said, "Sure."
Yeah, it energizes you.
And there's no parking meter, and it's...
I like Palm Springs, actually.
We've talked about it before. We've had conversations. It's wonderful.
It was 112 degrees.
call Palm Springs, I call it Cadillac City. Yeah. Because the ladies are going to the doctor and they get dark sunglasses like insects, and they're so small that they look under the wheel when they drive. And when you go to town, you see, oh, they have already cars driving. And then you overtake and you look to the left and you see the hand.
That's pretty good.
Cadillac City.
There's one, you played vampires a lot of times, obviously, but the one movie where you didn't play a vampire, but it's a vampire film, and I just love it. It's one of my
favorite
movies. Yeah, I think it's such a brilliant film. And you play the producer of that. What was that experience like? Because that director obviously had made such a unique cult movie before that with Begotten.
Well,
that's a
strange
film to go off.
I love Begotten.
That's why I made that film, because I had, I call a lot of actors in Hollywood trailer stars, because they have all their energy in the trailer. The trailer is too big, the trailer is too small, the trailer is too hard to call. And I'm a very normal person because I needed also for myself to be able to create. And I had a driver by Blade, and he said to me, I have a friend who makes films, and he makes a new film. We have maybe Malkovich and Willem Dafoe, and he would like that you play. And I have a film. And then I saw Begotten, the film, and I said, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
It's heady.
Yeah. And blood in black and white is even worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I made the
movie. I hope they do a Blu-ray of that and put on it Udo Kier, wow.
Yeah.
Just on the front cover.
I wish that it's like, it's hard to, find. Yeah. Yeah, it's real hard to find.
He was then, working on a release, yeah.
And then it was like, Willem, I made a few films with Willem, with Lars von Trier, with my son, what have you done with Werner Herzog?
Oh, yeah,
and I like Willem. I know Willem many, many years ago in New York when his son, who's now married and his children, was a little baby on his arms. And the thing was that Willem Dafoe and all these people, how can I say that? When the movie came and Willem went to the truck in the morning as Willem, and then he came out after 2.5 hours, the Hansons, the puppet from London, did the makeup, and he came out Nosferatu.
Yeah,
and I was so jealous that I was just playing a producer. And then Willem said to me, I was looking forward to kill you finally in a movie. I said, yeah. Okay. And the movie was, you know, sometimes you make movies and you think they're not good and they get nomination for the Oscar. Yeah. Willem was nominated for the Oscar. Or you make great films like I did Pinocchio, The Adventure of Pinocchio with Martin Landau, who just had got the Oscar, and I played a puppet master, but another one. And I saw how brilliant the film is. By the way, happy birthday.
Thank you.
And, good cigarette.
So and cool. the film didn't do
Doesn't
it.
Doesn't land. Yeah.
So, you see, if there would be a formula to make good movies, then there would be only good movies, which would be horrible because you couldn't see them all.
Yeah.
So you never know. You never know. Talent is, I did an interview yesterday, they said at very nice people, popcorn talk. Huh. And they said, well, what is the most important thing? I said, talent. And talent is something you cannot learn. You have it or you don't. You can learn a technique, but not talent.
Yeah.
And then comes the question, what is talent? But we have no time to explain that.
Hard to define.
And then comes to the other way, Lars von Trier's favorite word is, and we're talking about, he makes film with people like on the dining table, Lauren Bacall, Ben Gazzara, James Caan, Stellan Skarsgård, Nicole Kidman, all working, we all work for the same money. And we all have the same trailer, it's actually a container, but...
Doggo?
Yeah, all the films.
Yeah.
Nobody gets all the same.
Yeah.
Same, which is great because, for example, we had films in a restaurant, in a hotel. We had all the same room. And we, in the evening, we had self-service. We had to go. And it's amazing. You see Lauren Bacall going to get her food. And then you see Nicole Kidman. And Lars's word is the, his favorite word is, don't act. Because, which is difficult not to act if you make hundreds of films.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to act. I'm not acting. Oh, you're acting. It's like, so that's, you know, horror film. I like horror films because evil has no limit. And so you can, when I made a film called, they wanted me, seven directors, called Theater Bizarre.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, yeah.
That's so fun.
And I play a puppet myself.
Yeah. David Gregory, friend of the show.
Yeah, and so. I play a puppet. And I said to the director, I only do the film if I can kill a fly like nobody ever had killed a fly. And I said, how are you going to do that? And I put my my hand open in the air and catch a fly. So because it's clean, you will never see a fly. And then I said, now I can have the fly in my hand. And now we put in my other hand a little glue and a live fly. And I put my right hand slowly to my eyes. And with my thumb, I kill the fly. And they said, oh, that's evil. I said, that's why I like to do it. And everybody has killed a fly or tried to kill a fly.
There's one other director we can't leave because it's having such a nice resurgence, which is the resurgence of Suspiria, which we talked about a little bit at Texas Frightmare. I thought a long time ago I had heard a story that you were maybe working on something with Fassbender. That's why you're in the town where they happened to be shooting. Well, how did you end up in this iconic scene? Because it's key to the plot. You give exposition to the story.
I realized that after the film because I was working with Fassbender and then I heard Dario Argento is in town, Italian director.
Had you seen
Alida
his stuff?
Valli, no.
No.
Alida Valli and all that. So I said, I want to go. And Fassbender said, oh, for what? I said, well, it's a movie. I have also 3 days. So, so I went to the hotel and I met Dario and Dario said, I have a part, but it's a very small part. It's only one scene. And I said, okay, can I see it? And then I saw that actually I realized that I'm explaining the whole movie.
It all relies on you.
In front of this beautiful BMW building on a bench with Jessica Harper. And so I did the film. And then I did another film with him.
Was that Mother of Tears or was that something before
Third Mother.
Oh,
Mother of Tears.
And with Asia.
Yeah.
And I like Asia. I met Asia with Dario in Los Angeles when Asia was a schoolgirl. And then now a woman. So we made this film. And again, I am the monk who explains the whole Third Mother. And it's amazing. He likes me, obviously, in his movies, to be the one who explains.
You're the exposition.
But you got your real voice in Mother of Tears, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Suspiria was, I don't know why.
Some generic American.
Yeah. Because I didn't speak English so well, maybe.
It also was very windy. Whenever I watch this scene, I imagine the sound got ruined because it looks like you had a lot of wind.
It's outdoors. I did speak myself.
Yeah.
And then when, I don't know if they told me, but when I saw the film, it's not so good in a way because the voice is 50% of the personality. And I work a lot with my voice, so nobody can do that.
We've noticed today.
They can do that their own way, but not my way. But I like him.
Yeah.
I saw him when we got the award for the 40 years. And where did I see him again? Somewhere. And I didn't want it to be in a movie. I made a movie when Tilda Swinton was at the beginning of her career called Egomania. German director Christoph Schlingensief, very avant-garde. And we were a partner when she was working with Derek Jarman, when she also
got an award.
She got an award in Venice. king, some king. And so she is brilliant. I like, but yeah. Then again, I mean, I don't know. I didn't even want to see the script. It's always like you step out of a castle going to a football field. You have been there. You have done it, and people talk about it. Now they do it again, but bigger and different.
yeah,
I know.
Did they ask you to be a part of the new Suspiria?
No, but I said so. So many times I don't want to be in it. I think they heard it.
I had to take a left turn from horror very briefly before we wrap up because I think one of your funniest scenes of all time is in Ace Ventura, which I love that movie. But people forget that that was the movie that made Jim Carrey. And now he is obviously a completely different person. And celebrity type,
yeah,
you know.
And I have a little story.
Yeah, so what was that like, Ace Ventura?
I went, I have a story how I got in there. I went to Dino De Laurentiis, Wiltshire, and it was very funny for me because I hate audition. That's ridiculous. And there was a man before me for the same part, and he had a real fish in a glass, and I thought, oh, my God. And because he plays the billionaire as a fish collector.
Yeah.
And I said to him, you know what fish that is you have in your glass? He said, no. I said, it's a Japanese fighting fish. Don't put your finger in. He's going to bite your finger. And he was really pissed. and then he walked in, and then I came next, and I said to the casting, I'm sorry, I don't have a fish. But I can play the billionaire, no problem. And they said, okay. But then they called me and said, Jim Carrey wants to meet you tonight at 8 o'clock in the office. He has the last decision if you play or not. I said, wow. So I went to the office, opened the door, and Jim Carrey, I'd never seen him, jumped to me. I had a ring on, and he took my ring off my finger, and I said, what the fuck you think you're doing? He said, okay, you got the wrong.
Oh, great improv,
because in the story, I have a ring.
So,
and then I mean, he was so amazing. I couldn't believe it. And then I had to go. There were a lot of actors actually who trying to get on his level. You never do that. He's the star. And I was just trying, you know, when Courtney Cox said, this is Ace. He's a lawyer. And I said, should I call him? Does your friend has a name or should I call him lawyer? And awesome. He said, oh, that was funny.
Oh, if you can make him laugh.
And then he went to the, kind of used the bathroom, and then he went down, came back and said, don't you go in there. No, I liked, I like comedy, but I like comedy without being funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
Something, I do something totally ridiculous.
Stone face.
But it's not like, ha-ha, it's not Bob Hope.
Yeah.
I like that too, but I don't have that talent.
Yeah. I would love to see you in more comedies, quite frankly.
I would say.
I think you're a very funny and charming guy, so.
Yeah.
Well, Udo, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Van.
Three more questions.
Three more questions.
All right.
Well, I want to ask about
each one.
I want to ask about Blade.
Yeah.
What Stephen Norrington?
Oh yeah.
Obviously, that was one of his. I think it's his first film, wasn't it? Or he had done
It was his first American.
The first American movie. Yeah. Right. But what was your experience working with him? Because I mean, he's one of those filmmakers today that I wish still worked. Yeah. I mean, after Leave of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I mean, like it just felt like there was always clashes. There were always stories of clashes on set with Norrington. Did you ever hear see anything?
I did another film with him in London.
Yeah.
But right after. But there was also a little story for you.
Please.
I went to casting, and there was a man already dressed as a vampire. And I was sitting in the office, and then I heard through the door this actor saying, I was born a vampire. And I said, oh, I'm going. This is too cheap here. And then I said, okay, I'm already here, so okay, do it. So I went in, and I said to Steve Norrington, I said, I heard I said, but I would like to play the vampire like a stockbroker. And he said, interesting. 2 hours later, I had the part. Wow. And then we worked, and Stephen Dorff, we became friends, very good actor. And we just did the movie, and I was played. And then I played in another film, I forgot the name, in London, I played a kind of a fascistic photographer. Mm. And that was it.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay.
he's going to Elric. I do have another question. Actually, just FYI, the thing that scared me most that you played was the small role in Breaking the Waves. That was actually the film that one of the first things I remember seeing you in that were unnerved me. That's a comment, not a question.
Yeah. No, it was also like I had a shaved head because I was doing Pinocchio in Czech Republic. And Lars said, come one day, and I said, I went to the boat and I said, can I smoke a cigarette? Can I touch myself a little bit? He said, do that. And I said, have a beer. Yeah. And then Emily Watson, wonderful.
She's an amazing performance.
Wonderful. And she came in and said, what do you want me to do? And I said, I want that you fuck the sailor and I watch.
Yeah.
And then there was the scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she takes the knife.
Yeah.
The
no, it's scary character. So,
yeah.
But no, but that wasn't my question.
Oh, he still got one.
He just moved on to Rob.
He pointed to me.
I have a very simple one. Because I once read you said something really nice about Bill Pullman, and he's one of my favorite actors. So I wanted to know who are your favorite actors that you've worked with? That just you loved working with them. Not so much their work on screen, but you loved the interplay you had with certain actors.
Well, I like Bill Pullman, I like to work. We did a film. We actors are also like, when somebody offers me a film, I say, who else is playing?
Yeah.
Bill Pullman and Irene Jacob. I said, okay, I play the boss of KGB. So I was a Russian guy, a love affair between an American and Russian spy, her and him. But I like to, when you not work like with Bill, for example, that you can go to a bookstore and talk about a book, not only film. And I like actors. Bill, I like. I haven't seen him for a while because he works a lot in New York and theater. I did like Martin Landau. I like also, I must tell a little thing funny so we have some fun. I like also the famous actors from the past. They have a special way of telling you who they know. It goes like that. You have dinner, and then they take the wine glass, and they say, I told Jimmy. Everybody says, James Dean.
Yeah.
He shouldn't do that. So they all have the same. All
the same story.
And I told Marilyn. Anyway, so that's what I like in actors, that you have a normal thing, what you do every day, continuous going on. Not only the movie, and we should do it that way, we should do it that way. You know, because even if I worked with actors, I don't mention names, but I wouldn't work with them anymore because I do not believe in this method acting.
Uh-huh.
That if you don't like the person in the film, you can private also not talk.
Right,
to.
Right.
Yeah.
What is that? Yeah. It's just a movie.
Yeah.
What is that? So you don't talk to me because I'm trying to kill you in the movie? I don't like
So Joaquin's not like that?
No.
Joaquin,
I met Joaquin when he visited. I know his mother and his father. The mother is born 44 like me. And Joaquin visited River when he was 16. So I know him. And Rain and
of course,
Summer,
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah,
the whole family. Brother. They have all, because they were kind of a modern family. That's why all the Joaquin's real name is Leaf.
Yeah. Mm.
River, Rain, and Summer.
Yeah.
So they had all this thing.
Interesting,
He's pointing to Beckon at
Okay. Is there a contemporary filmmaker that you're really enjoying right now? Somebody that you'd either like to work with or you're just really enjoying their films that they're putting out?
There are a few. There is not one. I mean, they're getting also, when I saw first Almodovar's film, because I always like the courage of directors going far and doing something totally crazy. The filmmaker I worked with, that's why I did the film in Brazil with Sonia Braga, Kleber Mondonça, very talented director, because you just feel and you offer and they let you and they say no. And there is a few people. I just made a movie which is not out yet with Harvey Keitel and Stellan Skarsgård called The Painted Bird.
Oh, Jerzy Kosinski novel. Yeah. Very famous. Polanski's life is part of that novel. Yeah,
and it is a beautiful story. The story in three sentences is there is in a concentration camp, a family sent their little boy who's 10 years old away to survive. And he goes to different people. I'm a miller, and he comes to me to work for me, and my wife has an affair with my helper, and I'm very jealous. And one day I cannot stand it anymore, and I see at the table how they flirt, and she opens a little button on her blouse and things like that. And then I take him and I take a spoon, take his eyes out.
Ah.
And I put him on the floor and the cat is playing with it. And then I take him and throw him out.
Wow.
Harvey Keitel is a priest. Stellan Skarsgård is an SS officer. So the film is just finished shooting. And Czech Republic. And I like interesting subjects.
The novelist of that, story. Kaczynski was meant to be at the Sharon Tate house where everyone was murdered, but the airline lost his bag. Oh. And he almost attacked someone at the airline because he was so mad they lost his bag. And then little did he know what was happening at the exact moment he was harassing. So it was a very, because he's one of their best friends.
He wrote it 65 in New York. Some people said he didn't write it, but who cares?
Yeah, no, it's a truly great book. Novel, it's one of the great books.
The novel is there. Yeah, and it's an
incredible book.
So,
that's
what else can I tell you? I like music videos.
What about cooking shows?
I got the last question. He pointed at me, but
yeah.
Last question, Rob.
But I must say that I did the sex book with Madonna.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And I did two videos with Madonna, Deeper and Deeper.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Erotica.
That's right. I remember that.
How was that?
Wow. What was that
like? Crazy.
Move on.
Move on.
Well, I was gonna bring up last question. A really fun, underrated movie that you did is Modern Vampires, which was Richard Elfman. And horror comedy. Rod Steiger is Van Helsing in it. I think Kim Cattrall is your wife in it, maybe? I can't remember correctly. But it's just a really fun movie that a lot of people don't know about. And I remember loving it when it came out. Do you remember anything about Modern Vampires?
Also, I remember. I remember every 240 films. No, it was very... I went to meet Mr. Delfman, Elfman, who is... Mr. Elfman is the brother of the famous composer. And he said to me, since I saw you in the movie, I always wanted to put a stick to your heart. And now we do it in the film. And I said, okay, that's important. Who puts the stick to my heart?
Very important.
And he said... Rod Steiger. I said, okay.
Yeah. It's the pawnbroker.
I'm on board. And so Rod Steiger put it to my heart. And there was a beautiful Natalia Wood's daughter.
Natasha Gregson-Wagner.
Oh, yeah, from Australia as well.
So great. Yeah.
And Casper Van Dien. They were the lead.
Ice cream eater. Yeah.
And then there were a lot of Ferguson, who had the talk show. He was one of the vampire people, and me. That was good.
Yeah, I don't know this one. I got to see this.
Fun movie, and a lot of people don't know about, but I love it. I love it. I remember thinking your part. It was really hilarious. So.
That's it.
That was all right. A great
Yes. So much for joining
Thank you
so us much.
Today. Here, Puppet Master is out now.
Puppet Master is in theaters, VOD, all the jazz right now.
Yes.
As you listen right
check
now.
Check out the news.
And I must say the last word. I'm sorry for but
please.
Please
the
do.
Puppet Master. If you like blood, please go and see this movie. Because you cannot believe it, a helicopter puppet takes the head of somebody and it lands in the toilet in blood.
Spoiler.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
We can't beat that. Yay.